Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Donald Trump's big lie that he won the 2020 presidential election has spurred a lot of highly questionable developments in American politics over the past year and a half. But as Democracy reporter Kira Lerner of State's Newsroom reported for NC Policy Watch recently, one of the most destructive involves the enactment of scores of new Republican-authored voter suppression laws. In Georgia, for instance, it's now a crime to give someone food or water while they're waiting in line to vote. And sadly, as Lerner told me when I caught up with her, there are now many such highly questionable new criminal laws on the books in several GOP-controlled states. Well, Kira Lerner, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So, Kira, you've been one of the most, I'd say, the nation's most tenacious reporters documenting the impacts of Donald Trump's lie that he won the 2020 election. And recently, you authored a special two-part report that we published at NC Policy Watch on the subject of this spate of new laws that have passed across the country to criminalize actions related to elections. I'm sure there's a link between that and the dispute over the 2020 election. Tell us about your report and some of the things you found.
So in the few years since the 2020 election, I have been closely tracking all of the new voting laws that have passed in states across the country. As so many people have, we know that there's just been a spate of new legislation from state houses that do everything from limit who has access to the ballot to criminalize actions taken by election officials. So I was specifically interested in just that, the criminalization of all people involved in the voting process. And something that I noticed was not only were these laws just putting barriers and trying to make things more difficult for people involved in elections, but they were literally criminalizing people by enacting new felonies and misdemeanors and changing criminal statutes so that everyone from voters to third-party groups that help people vote, groups that do voter registration and things like that, and then also election officials, they're now facing the potential for, in some cases, felony convictions if they misstep or if they, in some cases, do things that were part of their jobs previously, part of their jobs helping voters or part of their jobs running elections. These things are now criminalized. And some of these felonies and misdemeanors do carry potential prison time in addition to steep fines. So this is a serious matter.
And I'm sure all of our listeners would support the idea if someone's really trying to steal an election or do something nefarious, that there needs to be, there needs to be sanctions for that. But a lot of the actions that you sort of talk about in this reporting, at least some of them, some of these things that have been made criminal offenses, they sound more like mistakes or administrative errors or even maybe well-meaning, pretty innocent actions. The Georgia example, of course, stands out, but I know there are others.
Right. I talked to a number of voting rights advocates who said that the real issue here is that this is criminalizing behavior that is not even nefarious. This is legitimate, innocent, one expert said, sometimes even good conduct that's taking place. You mentioned Georgia. In Georgia, there's now a new criminal penalty for people who hand out food or water to people waiting in line to vote. So I think we can all agree that by and large, there's nothing nefarious going on when someone hands a bottle of water to an elderly voter waiting in line to cast a ballot. We're just all trying to help the democratic process move along, and lines can be long. All voters can get thirsty. Yeah. And so this seems like common sense. But it's not just Georgia. We saw new criminal provisions all across the country that really make people involved in elections have to toe a line and worry about whether part of their daily behavior and conduct is going to be criminal. So I can give you another example. In Texas, please, election officials are now prohibited from giving a mail ballot to someone who doesn't specifically solicit one. And so Isabel Longoria, the former chief of elections in Harris County in Houston, Texas, told me that that's just such a huge part of her job. And large chunk of her job now just can't be done because she's worried that if she accidentally suggests someone take a mail ballot who didn't previously ask for one, she could be subject to criminal charges.
So this is happening, I gather, for the most part in states that are dominated by Republicans. Here in North Carolina, we're a divided state. We've got a Republican legislature, a Democratic governor. These kinds of laws have generally not proceeded. But I wonder, what do the proponents say? Do they
make any kind of a compelling argument that there's massive voter fraud or something that needs to be addressed? That, you know, mm-hmm. why are we doing this? Why are we going to all this trouble?
Yeah, well, like you mentioned, I found that a vast majority of the new criminal penalties are in Republican-controlled states. I found that 102 of the 120 new criminal penalties have been enacted in Republican-controlled states. And for the most part, the talking points are what you have been hearing over and over again since the 2020 election, even from Republicans who don't necessarily buy into Trump's big lie. But there's still this narrative that voter fraud is a massive issue and that we need to do everything we can to, quote unquote, protect the integrity of elections. And these laws, each one has kind of its own specific justification, but a lot of times these Republican lawmakers are trying to protect election officials. We know there's a need to help protect election officials. Over the last few years, we've seen them face constant threats and harassment. But when it comes down to it, I think for the most part, election officials don't think that these new criminal penalties are what's exactly going to protect them and make them feel like they're respected and able to do their jobs.
We're talking with Kira Lerner, who's a democracy reporter for State's Newsroom, where she covers voting, elections, redistricting, and efforts to subvert democracy. Kira, it seems that from your reporting, I get the impression that a lot of election officials, maybe like a lot of folks these days, are just saying the heck with this. Most election officials are volunteers or they're people who are doing their jobs for, you know, very modest income or modest pay. Talk to us about the effect that this is having on election officials across the country, this whole new ramping up of criminalization of violations.
Right. I think this is a major problem we have seen in the last few years and we're going to continue to see is that election officials don't feel like they're respected. They don't feel like the work they put into these difficult jobs is worth it. And they're deciding to leave their positions or retire early. I talked to Roxana Moritz, who was an election official in Scott County, Iowa. She had just run for re-election in 2020 and won what I believe was her fourth term. So she was ramping up to start another term as an election official. And she told me that she just had enough. It was the combination of running an election during a pandemic. She made an effort to pay her poll workers more because they were working in a pandemic. And then she faced an investigation from her state. And she told me that when she saw that Iowa passed this omnibus voting law that included a lot of new criminal penalties for election officials, that was kind of just like the last straw. And she said, it's too much. They're out to get us all the time. And I don't want to work in a position where I feel like they're constantly watching me and trying to catch me doing something wrong. So this is happening all across the country. A study from the Brennan Center for Justice recently found that 1 in 5 local election officials said they're likely to leave their job before the 2024 election. And experts told me they're just aren't enough people to fill all of these positions. And we're just losing so much institutional knowledge with all of these election officials potentially leaving their positions.
Yeah, it's a remarkable number. I know you were actually in Madison, Wisconsin recently at the National Association of State Directors of Elections, where they, I gather, get together to meet on a regular basis to talk about some of these issues. What, I wonder if you had any, things you found out there that shed additional light on this subject.
Yeah, I was just in Madison, Wisconsin for their annual meeting. It was the first time they were back in person since the pandemic. So everyone was really happy to be back together. It's a really friendly, cordial group, and they were happy to see each other and share stories and ideas. Some of the issues that they are concerned about leading up to the midterms and the 2024 election are issues that don't get as much coverage typically. And so I found it interesting that in addition to all of the threats and harassment we know election officials are facing and these new criminal penalties, day to day, they're worried about supply chain issues and whether or not they'll have enough access to paper to run their elections. We know that more voters since the pandemic have been casting ballots by mail, and that requires more paper. And while this might not seem like a big issue, the supply chain for paper across the globe has really been dwindling. Experts at the conference said that paper mills have shifted to producing cardboard and packaging material for the increase in online sales. And as a result, there aren't enough paper mills producing the type of paper you need to print ballots and ballot envelopes and even I voted stickers. So these election officials are scrambling. Some of them have state statutes that require them to print the paper they use within their state. They're just really finding it difficult to find vendors and be able to ensure that everyone will have enough ballots and ballot registration materials. So that's a whole nother problem they're dealing with on top of what the public thinks about when they think about the difficulties of running elections.
We're coming to the end of our time with Kira Lerner, who's the democracy reporter for States Newsroom. We're talking about the issue of criminalizing a lot of different activities that are related to elections. But I wonder if this ties in, Kira, to maybe even a bigger trend, which is the whole general effort to, we often use this term, suppress the vote. There's a general trend in many parts of the country, particularly in the aftermath of Trump's lie about the 2020 election, to just discourage people from participating in democracy, to make it harder to vote, to erect more roadblocks for voters, to just make the whole process more complicated and daunting. And one presumes that the motivation for that is that it would make voters who are more likely perhaps to vote one way less likely to come and vote.
Well, something I heard time and time again from people in the voting rights space and experts is that while there are 120 new criminal penalties on the books across the country targeting people involved in elections, we're not even sure that we're going to see that many more criminal prosecutions. Bringing prosecutions under these voting laws are not easy, and offenses do not occur all that frequently. We already have a lot of criminal statutes governing elections, and we don't see a lot of prosecutions of people for voting. When these cases happen, they're rare and usually get a lot of attention because they are so rare. But the real issue is that all of these new criminal penalties are going to have a huge chilling effect on voters. And voters are going to see one story about someone who's prosecuted for casting a ballot in the wrong way and think, well, is it really worth it for me to go out there and attempt to vote when I don't know exactly what the law is? The law is changing all the time. I don't want to run afoul of the law, so it's probably not worth voting. What's really difficult is that there's no good way to measure that chilling effect, and we won't ever know exactly the impact of these laws. But I think experts are really warning that this chilling effect could be very real. And people in the voting rights space have to do everything they can to make voters know that they are eligible and that their vote will count, and to protect them from these potential criminal penalties.
One thing we know that always helps is more information, better reporting, more details of the very kind that you produce. And so we thank you so much for your service. Folks can read Kira's stories. They're all published at ncpolicywatch.com. She's at States Newsroom. Check her out there as well. And News from the States is another national website that runs a lot of Kira's stuff. So we'll look forward to your next report, and perhaps we'll talk again later this year as we get closer to the election.
Sounds great. Thank you, Rob.
Coming up next, we'll talk to the founder and president of a triad-based veterans group that's working hard to bring Medicaid expansion to North Carolina. Stay with us.